Megan, you know what I love about our partner, the Essential Calendar? I love the product so much, of course, but I also love that it comes from a small business founded by two moms.
Right, just like us. Listeners, if you're drowning in details right now, like summer camps, travel plans, end of school year mayhem, give yourself the gift of the Essential Calendar, a seasonal, at-a-glance, poster-sized calendar for your wall. Get 10% off your order at theessentialcalendar.com/themomhour. That's 10% off at theessentialcalendar.com/themomhour.
Hi, I'm Sarah.
And I'm Megan.
We're two moms with 8 kids between us, from little to grown.
We're in different areas of the country and in different stages of life.
But we both know that motherhood's a lot easier when real moms share tips and encouragement.
And remind you that it's really all going to be okay.
We're not experts. We're parents who've been there.
We're not perfect. We're real. Welcome to the Mom Hour.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to episode 197 of The Mom Hour. I am Sarah Powers, here, as always, with the lovely Megan Francis. Hey, Megan.
Well, hello. What a welcome.
I mean, we're talking a lot this week. We got behind on recording, so...
So now we're getting ahead.
We're recording a lot this week. We've chatted a bunch, and we're going to chat some more today.
Get ready. Get buckle ready. Up.
We have a really fun episode today. It's a little bit of a catch-all about our families of origin, the families we grew up in, a little bit about birth order and sibling dynamics, and then kind of how that trickles into the families we're raising. So I wouldn't say it's not a topic we've covered. They're topics we've touched on before, but
we're just organizing it all differently, like all together in one place, I guess.
Yeah, and you came up with some really fun questions that I think our listeners can kind of almost play along, because they're good things to think about the family you grew up in and then the one that you're raising. So I'm excited. It's going to be
Me too.
Fun.
It's going to be a fun one.
Sarah, we're welcoming our sponsor, Element. That's spelled L-M-N-T, a zero-sugar electrolyte drink that leans on current science about what our bodies really need in order to deliver the most effective hydration possible. You know, Sarah, Eric is really into keeping up with health research, and he's been insisting to me for years that we actually need more salt to stay hydrated. Turns out Element agrees, because they've developed their product based on a growing body of research that shows that for optimal health outcomes, we actually need to be taking in sodium levels at 2 to 3 times government recommendations. That's a big difference.
Yeah, it really is, Megan. And, you know, electrolyte deficiency or imbalances can cause headaches, cramps, fatigue, brain fog, and weakness. I know I can feel really rotten when I'm dehydrated. And also, I don't love the taste of plain water, so I'm not that great about drinking it. Element makes a huge difference in how much I'm enjoying my hydration and in how I feel, and it's super easy to fit it into my daily routine. My favorite flavor of Element is the grapefruit, but if that's not for you, we're going to get you set up with a variety pack so you can find your favorite Element flavor. Plus, Element has a no questions asked refund policy. You don't even have to send the product back to get your refund.
Yeah, you can receive a free Element sample pack containing one packet of 8 flavors. So you'll get 8 total packets free with any order when you purchase through our custom URL. That's drinkelement.com/momhour, DRINKLMNT/momhour. This offer is available exclusively through our partnership, and it's available for both new and returning customers. To get that offer, again, go to drinkelement.com/momhour.
We are welcoming back Ritual as a sponsor today. Megan, we both try to make healthy choices, but you know, sometimes it's tricky to sort through fact and fiction when it comes to supplements and vitamins to figure out just what they're doing for us. That's why I'm glad Ritual keeps studying their products and sharing the results, especially as it relates to women, since women are the focus of all Ritual's products, including the Essential for Women 18 Plus Multivitamin.
And the results are super reassuring. Just as an example, Ritual conducted a university-led clinical trial for their Essential for Women 18 Plus Multivitamin, and it was shown to increase vitamin D levels by 43% and omega-3 DHA levels by 41% in just 12 weeks. Ritual's Essential for Women 18 Plus Multivitamin is made with high-quality and traceable key nutrients in clean, bioavailable forms with 9 key nutrients in 2 capsules per day. Plus, they are leading the industry when it comes to sustainability. They use lower carbon packaging and prioritize sustainably sourced ingredients. That kind of thoughtfulness really matters to me.
No more shady business. Ritual's Essential for Women 18 Plus is a multivitamin you can actually trust. Get 25% off your first month at ritual.com/themomhour. Start Ritual or add the Essential for Women 18 Plus to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/themomhour for 25% off.
Okay. We're launching right in.
We are.
Whenever we do these types of episodes, Megan, I like to imagine there's somebody who just happened upon our show for the first or second time. So for those folks at home, why don't you tell everybody just the basics of the family you grew up in?
Sure.
And then the family you're raising, like just the brass tacks. So we are all, yep, we're all on the same page.
Sure. So I'm the youngest of four. My oldest sister is the oldest in the family. She's 10 years older than me. So like everyone else falls in between.
Right.
I also, my parents divorced when I was about six. So I had two separate sets of step siblings. One set wasn't around long and the other,
they were passing through.
They were passing through. Transient step siblings, you might call them, although we're still in touch now. And then my dad remarried, my stepmom, Brenda, and she had a son and then they had a child together. So like, I have like a lot of moving parts in our family, mm-hmm, and that does change dynamics. It does make me like, I'm the baby of the family, but I'm also like, I don't know, I'm not quite the baby because I'm, mm-hmm, older than my youngest half sister and, mm-hmm, my stepbrother. So it did put me in an interesting spot. I myself am raising five kids. They're age, well, some of them are done been raised.
You're still their mom.
I'm still their mom, but I'm not raising them anymore. I'm just around, right? So 21, 19, 15, 13, and almost 10. So I had two sets of boys who were a little less than 2 years apart with a 3.5-year-ish gap between the boy sets and then, mm-hmm, another 3.5-ish-year gap between Owen and Clara, who's my only girl and the youngest.
Okay. That sounds good. I know all of that, but not everybody does. I am the oldest of three. We are spaced as a pair who are 2 years apart and then a little caboose. So my brother and I were 8.5 and 6+ when my sister was born. So a pretty big gap. We're not three equally spaced, which has been fun in different ways over the years. And then I have three kids. And they are more evenly spaced. I had girl, boy, girl, and I also grew up in girl, boy, girl. So that part is interesting. I had the same kind of gender order that I grew up in. But mine were, my older two were 4.5 and 2.5 when Violet was born. So the first two are 2 years apart. The next two are 2 years, 8 months or something like that. They right now are 6, 8, and 10. It's the few months of the year where they really are truly like stepstones. Like they're all even, yeah, numbers for a few months. And then the older two have spring birthdays, so it will become 6, 9, and 11 before too long here. So that's,
yeah, what's happening. We have similar here, where all of the boys' birthdays are in the fall,
right?
Clara's is in the spring, so, yes, for a little while they're all odd or even numbers, right, and then she's about to throw that off.
Yes, yeah. So you guys are all odd right now, and we are all even, yeah, right?
Uh-huh. And pretty soon, yes, and pretty soon, all of my kids will have double-digit birthdays.
That's birthday, right.
Or, you know what I mean?
The last digit. single digit.
Yep.
Okay. So we have some fun, relatively quick questions that'll allow us to move through this. And I think I will ask the questions.
Sure.
Even though you did come up with them. So I feel a little like I'm taking your credit. Okay. So the first question is, which one of your kids is most like you and how? And how does that make parenting them easier or harder?
You want me to go first?
Yeah. Why don't you go first this time?
Yep. Okay. So when you first asked that question, like my knee-jerk reaction is to say Clara is most like me, mm-hmm, but I'm not actually sure if that's true or if it's because she's a girl. And I see myself kind of play out through her, especially at her age. Like I really remember being 9 years old. Mm-hmm. I really remember all the things I was kind of going through in fourth grade, like the friend issues, mm-hmm, like insecurities. She's very worried about disappointing people. I remember like some of the things she'll come home and tell me she doesn't want to tell her teacher something because she's afraid she'll disappoint her. Like I remember having, yes, all those same feelings. And so I don't know if it's that she, like, in her deep down personality is most like me, or right now I just see myself really reflected in her.
Yeah. And you were never a boy. So
I was never a boy, and it does create,
so you don't have,
right,
any other girls to compare to in the ones you're raising. Yeah. That is interesting.
Right. And one other thing I think is interesting is sometimes at a different stage, they might remind you of themselves differently. So I would never have really thought William and I were very alike. Like, but now that he's in high school, I really see a lot of myself in him. Like, I think he's kind of come into his own and his personality, mm-hmm, is very easygoing. He comes off as really confident, but I know he's not as confident, mm-hmm, as he tries to come off. That's what I remember clearly at his, yep, age, feeling the same way. He's interested in performing. Like his social group is really important to him in a way that it really wasn't to my other, mm-hmm, older kids. Like they all had friends, but like they really didn't care that much about being part of a pack, mm-hmm, and he really cares about that. And so did I. So just like the older he gets, the more I kind of identify with like his high school self.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the question, does it make it easier or harder? I think it makes it easier. In that I find myself identifying with them a little, mm-hmm, more, or maybe going out of my way to almost identify with them a little bit more. But then sometimes I expect them to act like me, mm-hmm. like in a way that I get. And that's unfair because they're their own people, right?
They are.
They're like, not going to be them like to a act carbon
like you
copy.
Now or like you then. Like,
I think it's not even to act like me. I think it's like I expect them to act in a way that makes sense to me.
Right. You expect that because there are similarities, then right. they should be carbon copies. You should be able to predict or somehow.
Right. Like it kind of stymies me when they do something that doesn't make sense to me. Like, wait, what? And I think I allow a little more. I think I give a little more grace to that when it's a kid who I don't identify with the same way because I don't ever expect them to be like me. Right.
Yes. There's no shoes for them to fill, so to speak.
Exactly.
Yeah. Interesting. And I have to say, like, having a big family, you have seen this play out in more ways. Like, if you have two kids, it's kind of like, oh, maybe one will be like me. One will be like my partner. Like
yeah.
You
know? Right. Yeah.
Or one's this way because she's a girl. The other's this way because he's a boy. The more you have, the more you really see the variation across all those factors.
And I've made the joke before that, like, when I had Jacob and Isaac, they were so different. I thought, oh, well, that's all the kinds of kids there are. And then I had Will and I was like, oh, wait, nope, that's a third. And then I had Owen. I'm like, oh, another one. Like, they're all, I mean, it sounds so corny, but like, they're all so different.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
So how about you?
Okay. So for me, it's kind of a split decision with the older two being similar to me. They both are, but in different ways. So Allegra is very like me in kind of the ways that go along with birth order. She's the oldest. She's a girl. She's very, the way she presents to the world is very responsible, very mature, almost adult-like, which sometimes I think is hard and unfair because she's still 10. She's still a kid. Right. And I think sometimes when you do present that way, people expect that much more of you. And then you're never allowed to be silly or weird or awkward or so. And I think I was very much like that. I was well-spoken. I followed the rules. I was responsible. Adults liked me. I had kind of a balance of, I was confident enough to kind of like hold my own. I wasn't overly shy, but I wasn't like, you know, in the middle of every social, I was confident in a kind of a quiet way. And I think Allegra is too. And just being the oldest sister with two younger siblings, there's a lot of parallels. So I find myself identifying with her in a lot of ways, the ways that come with being the oldest in a household. However, I think when it comes to like hardwired personality, if we were to drill down into our Enneagrams or any of that, I think Reed and I are a lot alike. In fact, maybe more alike than Allegra and I. We just don't have the gender or the birth order thing in common. So he's methodical, he's detail oriented, he's prone to anxiety that almost comes out like stress or frustration or anger. And that's definitely, I was always told I was a short fuse when I was a kid. And it probably did come from not anxiety, like I was worried about making friends or going to school in the traditional sense, but some kind of anxiety underlying that. And that's definitely how he is. So yeah, I think with both of them in general, it makes it easier to parent kids that you have a lot of empathy for. Mm-hmm. But like you said, there's something refreshing about parenting a kid that you don't identify with at all because there are no preconceived notions. So
I think they're a blank slate.
They're a blank slate and you're not applying your own filters or your own experiences to trying to parent them because those wouldn't work anyway. Whereas when you do see yourself in a kid, you know, for better or for worse, we have the experience, but also maybe that experience sometimes steers us in a narrower way than we need to. I don't know. I think I'm agreed with you. Yeah.
Yeah. And actually the next question, we'll dig into that a little bit more too. But one question I have for you, like like an add on, you know, you identify really strongly with a firstborn.
Yeah.
And parts of that is because you're a firstborn. Mm-hmm. But I also wonder if there's anything to the idea that your firstborn is the only kid who ever gets your undivided attention. And maybe maybe you just align yourself with them in a different way than you ever can, like than you'd ever have the option to again. I mean, Jacob's 21 now, so I don't feel that way now. But I do think for many years, like many years, I had something like I just felt like I knew him better.
Yeah.
Then maybe I even did.
Well, and the other thing about a firstborn is they are even as they get older, you have to go through everything for the first time with them. And that is a bonding experience.
You've
known them the longest and everything is still new. Middle school is new. Puberty is new, you know, like all these things. And so everyone else's experience is a repeat of something you've gone through before, even though we know it's not a true repeat because they're all so different. So I wonder if that is not a bond, but just it's a different experience that it can't really be repeated. That's interesting. Yeah. Okay. So next question, and I can answer this one first if we want to flip flop.
Sure.
Is which of your kids is least like you and how? And how does that make parenting them easier or harder? Well, I only have three kids and I talk about the first two.
I don't think anyone's surprised. This is not,
yes, but for those of you who are new around here, my third child is a large and in charge personality, challenging in lots of ways, fun in lots of ways. So Violet is the least like me. She's outgoing and impulsive and highly emotional. And I think she's only six. She just turned six. So this is like, she is still developing. But when I was that age, I would have been kind of quiet and studious and obedient. And she is the opposite of those things. It does make it harder. I think it's good that she's my third kid because I don't take it personally. I think when you have a kid like that for your first kid, it feels like you've done something wrong.
You're if they're being punished.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Or like you somehow contributed to their,
yes.
You know, Violet's a natural boundary pusher. She's a natural, she does not take status quo as it is given. And that is a gift. Like we know that about our strong-willed kids is that they have really some skills and talents that will serve them very well later in life. It's just not
getting there.
It's just not easy to make it through the day right. with them. She's also sensitive. So she's kind of like bullheaded in some ways, but sensitive in others, gets her feelings hurt or is very sensitive to feeling excluded. And is highly, highly social and socially motivated. She doesn't like to be by herself. So all of these things are different than I was, and all of them make it challenging. But I think that the one silver lining is that I am just more laid back as a mom. And I know that I didn't, like, this isn't something I did. It's just who she is. And we'll get through it. So
isn't it rough when you see a kid who is sensitive and gets their feelings hurt easily, but you know that if they could just be less sensitive and get their feelings hurt less easily, that they would get their feelings hurt less often.
Yeah, it's like self-sabotage. Like, yeah.
It's self-sabotage. Mm-hmm. You're like, okay, but if you were just easier to be around, people would want to be around you. But like, it's like, yeah, it's like creates this vicious cycle. And there's like nothing, I mean, you can do all the coaching in the world, but like so much of it, they just have to like learn.
Yes.
It's hard.
Yes. And I do think that like little kids are, we talked about this when we talked about toddlers and teens, that like ball of emotions that hasn't regulated yet into like a normal personality. And so I think with strong-willed kids and big personality kids, it's just that much more obvious when they're 2, 3, 4, 5. And then I do think in the kind of middle grade years, and I don't know what happens after that, but they grow into some of those personality traits and then they start to come out as assets. So that's what I'm telling myself anyway.
Whatever you got to do to get through the day.
So what about you?
Okay. So I would say Owen is definitely the least like me. Like in every way, almost every box you can tick one or the other, he's the one I'm not. So he's stubborn. He likes debate. He likes to be right. I mean, I like to debate for fun sometimes, but he really wants to be right. Mm-hmm. He doesn't even matter. He doesn't care if he actually is right. So it's not the spirit of knowing that matters to him. It's the spirit of owning the fight that matters to him, which does not compute with me at all. You know, he doesn't back down. He doesn't apologize. He's very logic oriented. He's very analytical. And like we mentioned before, like in some ways it's easy because I don't even try to identify with him.
Like, what is this?
Yeah. Like, what is this little alien? And I find him fascinating. And he's one, I mean, I don't want to say I have a favorite, but I've made this joke a lot. Yeah. Like if I had to say I had a favorite, Owen would probably be like, you know, maybe my favorite. He's just his own person. And it's just easy. Like, I don't have any choice but to stand back and be like, you are you.
Mm-hmm.
In some ways it can be hard because I actually see a lot of his dad in him. I know they're not the same person, but it's easy for me to then almost try to make him into this like little duplicate of John. And that's not fair either.
Yes.
It's like, I'm not trying to make him like me, but I'm trying to make him some, like I'm trying to put him in a box or a category somewhere and I can't. And so, another place where that might get hard is right now he's 13, he's in seventh grade. He still has this like sweet little boy side to him that makes us stay bonded that, you know, and if that's probably going to go away at some point, at least for a little while. And I'm just worried that we might be in kind of for like a little rough time.
Right. Because you already have such opposite personalities.
Right. Yeah. And I depend on him being the one who comes in the morning and gives me a high five. Like he wants to snuggle with the cat. Like I kind of depend on those little moments of sweetness. Like I know he'll snuggle with me or come put his head on my shoulder. And like, if he doesn't do that anymore, I don't know where we're going to find common ground. So,
yeah, that's interesting. So I have another question that kind of relates back to birth order since we're talking about this. Do you see, I mean, you have five kids. So Clara is a youngest. Owen is also kind of a youngest because he's the youngest of four boys. Do you see anything? We've talked about the more hardwired personality. Do you see anything in those younger kids that reminds you of what it was like being the youngest?
Yeah, I mean, yes, Clara and I are very, really present, I guess, or manifest as mm-hmm. youngest in the same way. I think wanting everyone to get along, really mm-hmm. wanting everyone to have harmony, mm-hmm. wanting to have a voice, like wanting to be seen mm-hmm. And say something funny and smart that everyone's going to react to. And like sometimes that ends up getting you in hot water because mm-hmm. what you say actually isn't that funny or whatever, you know.
Right.
But with Owen, he was like that, but he's kind of outgrown it. Mm-hmm. Some of those things. Yeah. And what I also think is really interesting is like when I look at typical birth order traits that are mm-hmm. supposed to be applied to people, they kind of don't apply to my kids as much as I would have thought. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, like the perfectionist oldest, the, you know, the middle child is kind of lost. I guess Will could kind of be like, we kind of make a joke about it.
Yeah.
Like Will be the middle child, but he's really not. Like he's come out hard and made a place for himself.
Right.
Like I just,
and he's responsible and yeah. routine oriented. And
yeah.
Other
so
things.
I don't know that I see it so much.
Yeah.
But not in like the classic ways.
Yes. So. And I think when you dig into the reading, it number one, it is fascinating, but number two, you realize how many variations right. there
variation,
are. Even
yeah.
even the psychologists who study it, it depends on gender. It depends on like if you have four boys in a row, like you did, that's different than if you alternated.
They're their subset. And,
right.
and then within the boys, each right. subset is a mm-hmm. subset, right? So it's yeah.
It
yeah.
is fascinating stuff if you dig into it. Actually, I'll give a shout out Amy and Margaret at What Fresh Hell podcast, which is a, mm-hmm. you know, another podcast kind of similar to ours if you haven't listened, have done some really good episodes, a few different ones I can think of on that kind of psychology, either the birth order or sibling, like how siblings have to be opposite of one another. Like it's just their biological need to have like an opposite pair. Like you have to have somebody to differentiate from. So I think it's yeah. interesting stuff if you like to dig in. I'll link those up in the show notes.
Sarah, we are welcoming a new sponsor that I'm really excited about. Factor, a meal delivery service that's different from some of the others we've worked with in the past. Factor delivers chef-prepared meals that are fully cooked and ready to eat.
Yeah, Megan, I love this because the meals are never frozen and can be ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Factor lets you pick from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular choices like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. They also have more than 60 add-ons like breakfast, lunch, snacks, and beverages to keep you nourished and feeling great all day long.
So funny thing, I got a shipment of Factor meals right before going out of town last week. And by the time I returned home, Eric had eaten every single one. He's super picky about food quality and nutrition and very suspicious of prepackaged food. And he loved them, especially the jalapeno lime cheddar chicken. So these would be a great option to leave with your partner if you're on your way out of town.
Oh, I love that idea. Brian definitely took one or two of these to work, so they make a great workday lunch as well. And for those with gourmet tastes, Factor even has meals with filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and asparagus. That's a delicious way to treat yourself. Listeners, head to factormeals.com/momhour50 and use code momhour50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code momhour50 at factormeals.com/momhour50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. Okay, Megan. Well, over here at the Mom Hour, we are big fans of our sponsor, Our Place. In fact, you, me, and our team member, Katie, were all comparing notes on our favorite product. Katie was telling us that even though she's packing up to move her family to a new house, she cannot put that mini perfect pot from Our Place into the boxes yet because she's using it like every night.
Well, as someone who also has a perfect pot, I got mine as part of their mini home cook duo set. I get it. It's nonstick, which is key, but it also has all these handy features like a steam release lid with a built-in strainer and this nice beechwood spoon that nests on the handle in this perfect little peg.
Okay, well, I didn't get this pot, but now I want it. That sounds so great. Our Place's cookware is great to cook with, beautiful to look at, and healthier for us as well. All of Our Place's products are made without PFAS, also known as forever chemicals. In addition to their cookware and tableware, Our Place is also making waves with their Wonder Oven, the most stylish all-in-one air fryer and toaster oven. Again, free from the forever chemicals found in many of those air fryers.
Listeners, Our Place offers a 100-day trial with free shipping and returns, and we've got a great deal for you. Go to fromourplace.com and enter the code MOMHOUR at checkout to receive 10% off site-wide. That's fromourplace.com, code MOMHOUR.
Okay, we're going to keep going here. And now we are going a little bit back into our families of origin with this question, Megan.
Yeah.
So I can't remember whose turn it is to go first. But the question is, which sibling were you most likely to fight with growing up? Why don't you go first?
Okay. Definitely my brother, John. He's 4 years older than me, but we were the closest in age of my siblings. And like, we really had a classic big brother, little sister relationship. Like, he tortured me. Like, I remember him holding me down and tickling me till I peed my pants. I remember him like doing that thing where he like hovers over you and spits, and like the spit kind of like classic bully stuff.
The
spit like hovers over your face, like sucks it back up. I actually, when I was, one of my earliest memories is being like 5 years old, and I had like 30 imaginary friends.
I remember.
And I plotted for them to like do away with him.
Oh.
Like, we had like a true crime case happening.
And,
but, and he used to also do this thing where he'd hide at the top of the stairs, and I was always terrified to go to bed, and I'd know he was up there waiting for me. And then he would jump out and scare the living daylights out of me. So it was rough for a few years, but
did you do anything to torment him? Like, were you annoying? Were you like meddlesome?
I'm sure he would
say, what would he
say
if you had to, like, I mean, do you remember, like, I don't see you as a, like a button pusher of a little kid.
No, I was not a button pusher, but I think that I was there. I was an easy target.
Yeah.
I think I always reacted big. Like he could get a shriek out of me or a scream out of me. Like, I think there was just a lot of like, I was bad at ignoring it.
Yeah.
Like, I was so, and also, you know, I wanted to hang out with him and his friends. I was lonely. Like, I didn't have any siblings my own age, and until I was well into my, like, you know, 7, 8, 9 years old, I really didn't have neighborhood kids to hang out with. So I think I just tagged along and annoyed him, but I really just think that was it. I don't think I was a particularly wild child. I don't think that I was, like prone to bursting into tears or whatever. It wasn't like explosive, like the way you described Violet. I think I was just there.
Yeah.
It was just like a pesky little sister. But we did spend the most time living together of me and all my siblings. And then we were closest in age. So we were also closest growing up. And we hung out quite a lot when I became a teenager. I remember a period of time from when I was like 13 to 17 that we were quite close. Then he went into the army. 13 to 15, we were close. He went in the army, and then he got out when I was like 17 or 18, something like that. And we were very close during that time. And we've been close ever since. Like, we got over our fighting when we were like 10 and 12, probably, or 12 and 8, probably.
I think that's really good for moms of fighty kids to hear. I have taken solace from my own experience, just knowing that you do grow out of it and often go to have a close relationship. You guys live in the same town and like hang out all the time. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Our kids are good friends. And he married my best friend.
It was convenient.
From college. And so we're very close now.
Yeah. Okay, so, well, I said at the top of the show, so the way we're spaced is too close in age, and then the caboose. So that's partly why. It's not like I had a whole bunch of different siblings with whom to fight. The one close in age is my brother, who's 2 years younger. And so we did fight a lot as little kids and probably medium-sized kids, which is like the most opposite of personalities.
Right.
You know, he was physically rambunctious and impulsive, and I was like this little, you know, wanted to sit still and color with in the lines. And I'm sure I was not, I don't think I was probably very much fun to play with. Like, I was kind of a solitary, I liked to play by myself. I might have done make believe or drawing, but I wasn't, he probably wanted a playmate looking back, and I didn't make a good playmate, especially not in the way that he wanted to play. And we just got on each other's nerves. And then he would instigate, and we fought physically until we were, I don't know, probably 6 and 8 or something, just, you know, hitting, slapping. And I just remember I don't think we had anything in common. And then I remember probably more years of indifference. Probably we outgrew the active fighting. We each had our own friends. And then I remember, like, probably when we were 13 and 15 or 14 and 16, really like actually building a new relationship where we thought each other's friends were cool. He dated this really great girl, and I became friends with his girlfriend. I have a distinct memory of when I had a driver's license, every once in a while, if we weren't doing anything, we'd be like, let's go to the movies, and we'll tell mom we're going to the movies together, and then she'll pay for it because she'll be so happy that we're hanging out together. And it was true. I think my mom was really sad we were so mean to each other. as little kids. So anytime we hung out, it was like, oh my gosh, you're hanging out. Yeah. And so we used to like abuse that and be like, let's tell her we're hanging out and she'll pay for the movie. So yeah. And we're, you know, we get along great now, but yeah, we fought a lot. And then my sister and I were just so far apart in age that it didn't make sense to fight. We didn't have things in common, but we didn't fight.
Yeah. My sister and I were 10 years apart, and I would say we were not even indifferent. Like I was a baby to her, you know what I mean? And then she was off doing her own thing. We weren't even around each other. So we became close. Like when I was in high school, when she started having kids, she came around more. She brought the kids over, like, you know, I played with them. Like we kind of became close through that. And then I had kids really young. So that of course bonded us more too.
Yep. And that's the same with us.
Yeah.
Okay. So similar question, but with your kids, which of your kids are most likely to fight with each other? Do you want me to go first?
Yes, you go first.
Okay. Well, that would be Reed and Violet, the middle and youngest, and kind of for a lot of the same reasons as my brother and me, only in this case, Reed is me and Violet is the younger, more rambunctious. I mean, I want to say it was really, really bad when Violet was like two and a half and Reed was like five. He was kind of at the height of his rigidity, like lacking flexibility. He just went through a really hard couple years there he was hard to be around. And then she was this wild 2.5-year-old. So things like, you know, touching my Legos, let alone like a single thing out of place. And then he just had zero emotional regulation skills. And she is an instigator. So I think it was probably a really pretty similar dynamic to what I had growing up. To this day, they are still definitely more likely to get on each other's nerves. But actually, the fighting phase we're in right now, I would say, is almost equal. It's what's the word I'm looking for? Like it goes all different ways. It's like equal opportunity is the word I'm looking for. It's equal opportunity annoyance. Any one of them gets annoyed with any one of the other. They all have the ability to pair off well or to pair off and argue. But definitely like the oil and water personalities are Reed and Violet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's tough. Like, I mean, I do think the boy girl thing can sometimes almost exacerbate it because there aren't those like, I mean, it sounds so like gendered to say, but like, you're probably not going to share friends or you're probably not going to have the exact same interests or want to play with the same toys or whatever. So like it almost creates the oil and water two things, but then there's also the lack of
commonality.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely.
So in our house, there are the four boys. I would say right now, Owen and Will probably are like at this moment, the most likely to fight with each other.
What does that look like at 13 and 15, the fighting? Bickering, I'm just curious. Okay. Bickering.
Kind of like a low level disgust.
I don't know why that's
like,
funny.
They just complain about each other and they're not even actively fighting and they don't fight. They might argue or have a little dust up, you know, but it's so mild. And then like, we'll be sitting at the dinner table and they're just like grumping about each other.
Yeah.
And like, well, you know, oh, and he does this and that. He leaves granola bar wrappers lying around. Oh, Will does this and that. You know, this is the age where this stuff happens. Like, first of all, they share a room. They're both a little grumpy about it. Although their bedroom is huge and they have their own bathroom. Like, they have nothing to complain about, but they will still find things to complain about. And then also it's the age. Like, one of them is newly in high school and William is really taking high school very seriously, like the high school experience. Like, he will be the one kid of mine who wants a letter jacket.
Yeah.
Who wants a class ring. Like, he's into it. He wants to do it to the hilt. And he's got his buddies and blah, blah, blah. And then Owen's in middle school. They're just like, they're at this place where 2 years makes a huge difference. And I do think, like, with the bigger boys, Jacob and Isaac, they went through the exact same thing, like around the same age, starting around like when the oldest one is maybe 10, 11, 11, 12, they just start to like, up until that point in my family, they were just like in pairs. Like, they had shared friendships. They would get invited to the same birthday parties. If they had friends who were siblings, they would always be together. They just kind of got like lumped together. And then there comes this age where like, they now need to start to transition like into their own people. And so it's awkward for me. Like, the first time I went through it, I didn't know what to do. I'm like, oh, so Jake and Isaac aren't invited to the same parties anymore.
Yeah.
What does that mean? Like, does that mean they have to have like new sets of friends that belong to just them? And
you're like that's not convenient for me as a mom.
No, truly. I was like, wait a second. I liked when they were always friends with siblings. And then, you know, sometimes one would really like the older brother and then like the younger one wouldn't necessarily like the younger sibling anymore. And they had opinions about it. So it's just this awkward transition that happens. I will say that now that Jake and Isaac are kind of on the other side of it, they're great to each other and they know they have their differences, but they get along really, really well. And they now kind of create this buffer. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that they really help set the tone in the family to where it doesn't, like, the bickering and fighting right. or whatever doesn't right. get out of control. And then I've got Clara, and she's like this like pet of the family.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like Beth from Little Women.
Yes, she
only
is.
Hopefully not ill.
Right.
But like, she's like gentle Beth. So she like is. Nobody wants to fight around her.
Yeah.
It, like, I think it kind of breaks their heart a little bit when she says something like, guys, can we all just get along? Like, everybody really just wants
she
to
is,
like.
She has like the most angelic face and voice. And like, she just is how, yeah. I can't yeah. picture her picking a fight with anyone.
No, she really, she never would. She would feel bad for the, even the idea that something she did might cause some kind of, you know, tension. So at the dinner table, she'll just like kind of pipe up with some little thing and like her eyebrows kind of go up a little bit, like this little like worried look, and then everyone just kind of gets over it. So I do think sometimes having the bigger family or having someone older or younger can mm-hmm. dispel some of that.
Well, I think yeah. this is a good time. I mean, longtime listeners, you've heard us talk about this before, but in case you're new around here, it's really important for new moms to know that like sibling dynamics, they'll change in so many ways.
Yes.
I think when you have like a 1-year-old and a 3-year-old and it's your first 1-year-old and 3-year-old, you're thinking, okay, like this is,
it'll always be this
it'll
way.
It'll always be this way. This one's always going to be this pattern. And you worry so much about how to break up the little fights, which is good. I mean, you should know how to break up those little fights, but it's amazing how the two that didn't get along become the two that do get along. And then this other one, depending on how many kids you have, I guess, but
right.
it changes within the pairs, it changes within the family dynamic. And so just like, you can just rest easy knowing it's going to go through like a million different phases. It doesn't mean that you don't think about like how to navigate bickering and fighting, but it's not always going to be the same. And I think it's so yeah. interesting as they get older. Okay. Should we switch gears a little?
Yeah.
All right. So the next question is, what is your middle name? And Ooh. Do you have any kind of a story about why your parents chose your name? And you're going to go first, I think.
Okay. Yeah. So my middle name is Elizabeth, and I remember as a kid, like, loving my name. I always have loved my name. I've never had, like, a point where I didn't like it. I always loved the way Meg and Elizabeth sounded together.
Mm-hmm, I do.
Yeah. It has a nice flow. My name is spelled with an extra A. My sister's name is not even a real name, I don't think. Catherine. It's K-A-T-H-R-E-E-N.
Like Kathleen, but with an R.
But with an R, yeah. which has caused her you know, a lifetime of never being on a keychain. But also, like, no one knows what to do with her name. Like,
yeah.
she's Kathleen. She's Catherine. I think the story goes that my grandma's name, which was Catherine, was with an E at the end. So, like, K-A-T-H-R-Y-N-E.
Uh-huh. Oh, okay.
Was supposed to have been pronounced Catherine or something,
oh, okay.
but nobody ever did. So my mom literally chose a phonetic spelling mm-hmm. for her name. And I don't know why they chose to go. I think Megan was starting to become a little more popular and maybe they just decided to jazz it up mm-hmm. by adding an extra A. I've always liked the way my name looks. I like the spelling it causes a little bit of trouble,
I mean,
but
the
not
thing as someone with a Sarah, there's a Sarah with or without an H, but it's such a binary thing. You either have one or you don't. I feel like with
right.
Megan, there's so many
there's
ways
so
to
many
spell
ways
Megan.
To spell
I don't even know which is the most.
They keep inventing new ones.
Yeah.
I'm going to say probably nowadays M-E-G-A-N is the most common.
Yeah.
But M-E-G-H-A-N is also mm-hmm. very common. I think M-E, and sometimes people just throw all the letters
there's
in.
There's like everything. M-E-A-G-H-A-N-N-E.
Sometimes if people can't decide, they're just yeah. like, how about all of it?
Yeah.
Just have all the letters. And ironically, my brother's names are Paul and John.
Yeah.
So easy. Like they went with the boys. They're like, yeah, four letters, but the Bible, we're good.
That's funny.
So another kind of funny thing about my name is that my mom always pronounced my name Megan.
Uh-huh.
And that's what my name was supposed to be. And almost nobody pronounces my name Megan, to the point now that I've almost given up. Like, I like Megan,
so
but
say
I don't.
The two side by side, so people
Megan
uh-huh
and Megan
uh-huh
you hear so, the difference, right?
Yeah, I hear the difference, and I knew what you were saying, but
yeah,
it helps to hear them. Do you know who pronounces your
yeah.
name Megan? Is my mom.
Who?
Have you ever noticed that?
I you know what, I probably did. I bet you I was like, oh yeah, like when people do it, it always gives me this little oh
mm-hmm.
thanks, like it makes me happy. I don't care when they don't. Like,
and
it doesn't bother me.
Like,
but
she would have done that because of the spelling or anything. I think that's
right.
just the way she pronounces Megan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And a lot of people think because of the extra A that it's Megan. It's definitely not Megan, but Megan or Megan are fine. I will say that the one time I was consistently called Megan was in college when I hung out with a bunch of stoners.
Hmm.
And they would be like, hey, Megan. Like, just remember walking into my house and my roommate and his friends who were had been doing some things would all call me Megan.
Maybe there's just a little more. There's enough time to extend
like,
that.
Their brains were like processing it a little slower or something. Like they kind of like pronounced it the way like a surfer would or something.
So
and it was
I wonder if there's regional. Now I want to like dig into the pronunciation of your name, because I wonder if there's regional, not just because of the way it's spelled, but if there's regional pronunciations of. If some areas of the country say more of a Megan versus a
maybe.
Megan.
Well, yeah. And another thing, and this is, I mean, I don't want to go down too much of a rabbit hole, but I remember having this long debate or conversation with the name about the name Carrie, mm-hmm. which apparently if you live like in the Boston area, I believe there's an additional way of saying it. So it's not just Carrie, but Kerry.
Oh my.
So it's like, and there's like a third one too. It's like Carrie, Carrie and Kerry.
My.
I don't know. We could probably go on about dialects.
You and I love that stuff. Forever. That's like really interesting.
We're getting way off the rails. But anyway, that's my story about my name. How about you?
Okay. Well, the Sarah part, the story goes that somewhere I saw that it was the number one most popular name for the year I was born. If that isn't true, it's right up there. I mean, I grew up with four or five Sarahs in every class. The funny thing is there was no way to know that at the time. My parents thought it was an old name, an old biblical name. Some great grandmother somewhere had it. And so they thought they were bringing back this old biblical name and giving it new life. And they thought they were the only ones doing it, which is so funny because, you know, then it turns out to be the most popular. My middle name is Jane. And that was my dad's mom who died before my parents were even married. So even my mom never met her mother-in-law. And when I was a kid, I did not like the name Jane and I didn't like the combination of Sarah Jane. It sounded like kind of like, I don't know, backwoods, like Sarah Jane, like
Sarah Jane.
Yeah, exactly.
See, I love Sarah Jane. To me, it sounds so like, to me, it sounds old fashioned, like from like a 50s book about.
Yeah, I like it. I mean? I love it now. And I have probably since late high school, but as a little kid. And then in first grade, there were two Sarahs in the class and the teacher decided to call me Sarah Jane as my name. Without consulting me, first of all.
That's not okay.
That's not okay. And I just went home in tears about it. So I didn't love the whole thing. And then I kind of felt bad about that because then I was hating this name that was my grandmother's that I had never met, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
Well, now I really do love it. I do like that I'm Sarah with an H. I don't have a strong preference. I don't mind Sarah without an H, but I've always kind of liked that that's my spelling. And I love Jane as my middle name, and I gave it to Violet. So Violet is Violet Jane, and that's really fun. The funniest part is, so none of us, I didn't know my grandma Jane, and my mom didn't even know her. She was my dad's mom. She died very young. And we were hanging out with an extended family of some kind who reminded my dad, who he should have known this, but it was lost in family lore, that her name wasn't even actually Jane. It was one of those Texas Southern things where her name was Colleen, but then she was assigned the nickname Jane. But the funny thing is there's like four or five different people on this side of the family whose middle names are Jane in honor of her, and her name wasn't even Jane. I remember being
Wait a second,
why are we all named Jane? It was nowhere on her birth certificate. It wasn't even her middle name. It was like literally not her
name.
That
is hilarious.
But I like it. So
I like it too. And I think it's very sweet that Brian calls you Sarah Jane.
Oh, yeah, he does.
I noticed that a couple of times.
Yeah, he does. Really, and it does not bother me now the way it did in first grade.
Yeah.
Yes.
My brother's nickname is Buck.
Mm-hmm.
His name is Paul. So Buck is not a shortened version of Paul. And now he's just known as Buck. And I have no idea where it came from. I think it was like a grandpa was called Buck and his name also was not Buck.
Mm-hmm.
But like just became his name. And so,
and was that from when he was a baby? Like that was the name kind of assigned to him. It's not like if he picked it up along the way.
He's a junior. My dad is also a Paul or was a Paul. But then my dad was called Doug, which is his middle name.
Oh,
so my dad is a Paul who everyone called Doug.
Okay.
And then my brother is a Paul that everyone called Buck. It's family naming is so funny.
And that's another thing that gets so regional, right?
Like, yes.
Yeah. Like given names and family names and going by the middle name. And interesting. Okay. So speaking of nicknames, perfect segue. What nicknames did your family call you growing up? And did your siblings have nicknames? So I'll go first. I had zero nicknames growing up. Like I had to rack my brain thinking maybe there was a little pet name somewhere in there. Mm-hmm. I remember being really little and one of my like preschool friends, their mom called them Kitten as a like a pet name, you know, like sweetie, honey. But I thought Kitten was so cute. And I asked my mom to call me Kitten and it didn't really stick. So that's I had funny. no nicknames. I remember in high school, like kids would call you by your last name or something. And it was cool, but that doesn't really count. My brother, whose name is Brian, got the nickname Bubba from my sister. I think she was trying to say brother or Brian. And that stuck. And we kind of revived it when I had kids and my kids call him Bubba. That's like their uncle name, which is convenient because I also married a Brian. So we have two Brians, similar to you. You have a brother and an ex named John. So that helped distinguish the Bryans. My brother does go by Bubba within the family. And then, you know, my sister has a name that was kind of already a nickname. They named her Cassandra. She's always gone by Cassie. So that's already kind of a nickname. And we just called her Cass, Sass. She had a few other nicknames, but no, like, not like you were saying with Paul and Buck.
Yeah. So I also had like no nicknames. Isn't that funny? I think that when I was little, they called me like Moo Moo for a while. Of course, everyone called me Meg. I mean, that's makes sense, but like not like a true.
Right.
And Moo Moo did not stick. My sister's nickname was String Bean.
Okay.
And at some point I started being called String Bean, but I always kind of got the feeling that that was because he forgot he wasn't talking to Catherine.
It's like
or something.
A hand-me-down nickname.
She was too old to be called String Bean, I guess. My brother, John, was called Pigs.
Yeah, that's
funny.
I don't remember
why.
Okay.
It was just Pigs, as far as I can remember back. And then in addition to having the name Buck, Buck was also Buford.
Oh, that's
so
funny.
So in addition to the nickname that became his name, he also had a nickname on top of that. I'm sure there were others, but those are just the ones that pop into my head. And I do remember being like a little jealous that I didn't have a better nickname growing up.
Yeah, I wonder if like some families have more nicknames and some or if it's just some names lend themselves.
Because I think it's
like,
that.
Yeah, I definitely was.
And some personalities, I think, lend themselves to being kind of teased with nicknames or. Yes. Yeah.
OK. So now we got to get into our kids' nicknames. We were talking before recording about this. It's almost embarrassing the things we call our kids and how you have to trace back why you give your kids the nicknames that you do. It's so funny. Now, I mean, if our kids were having these conversations in 20 years, hopefully most of these nicknames, like, they're not the ones that stick forever necessarily. They're like for me, it's like the little funny things I call my kids around the house, not their nicknames for out in the world. But
yeah,
the question is, do your kids have nicknames and what are they? So do you want to go first?
Okay, I'll go first. And a couple of these are mildly inappropriate, but not anything you have to like earmuffs or anything. So
I like that you have inappropriate nicknames for your
Jacob,
own kids.
Well, and some of them. Okay. So Jacob, when he was a new little tiny baby, we took him to the pediatrician, like when he was 2 days old. And we never went back to this woman because we thought she was a little weird, but she kept calling him Mr. Fister.
Huh.
And John and I could not stop laughing. Like we could not keep a straight face. We were dying. So we kind of jokingly called him Mr. Fister for a while. Then we're like, we have to stop because this is going to stick.
Right.
And it's not what we want for our firstborn son. So he became Jakey boy. Mm-hmm. I don't like, that's just stuck. I still call him Jakey boy, Jacob. Like we always knew Jake was probably going to be the nickname. What's interesting is he's really like Jake has never become the name he goes by.
Yeah. I was wondering about school and stuff like friends.
He did have friends who called him Jake, but like just as many people called him Jacob. And so it's like, everyone knows he's like a Jacob or a Jake or like a Jakey, but then Isaac was Chuckles. And I think we called him that because he had this really chubby little face. And like when he would laugh, he would just laugh with his whole, all the rolls in his face. And he had this like deep, like chuckle. So we called him Chuckles. That stuck. I think John still calls him like Chuckle Hut sometimes. I don't even know why. William, we just gave like all the nicknames, I think as a joke. Like he was one of those kids that was just easy to tease and easy to come up with nicknames. I mean, the ones that pop into my head are Wilbo Jenkins and Gustable Chiggins. But I remember for a while they would just add a bunch of words on like Gustav, like Chiggins the third or something.
We totally do that.
Yeah. And then he would have like, those would be his gamer names
for
a while for that period of time. Then they'd move on to a different name. Owen, for a long time, we called him Owner because that was a video game thing too. Like,
oh, okay.
If you own somebody, you're an owner, like you're a winner.
I didn't know that term.
And it can be spelled with a P, like a P and then a zero, I think, W-N-E-R. So we called him Poner for a while. He did try to self-nickname his own self Boner. And we would not allow it. We're like, no, you can't call yourself Boner. And he was like, why? And then I was thinking of that show, Growing Pains, from the 80s, where Kirk Cameron had a best friend named Boner.
So I do remember the show. I don't remember that detail.
It was his best buddy. And I remember even like as a young kid thinking, how are they getting away with this? Like, name is Boner. This is very strange.
That is so funny.
But now sometimes, like as a joke, I overheard just the other day, I'd forgotten about this one, but William called him Emperor Bonnier. So oh, what's up, Emperor Bonnier? It just was so funny to me. And then Claire is just Bear. She's Claire Bear. She's Barry. She's Clary Bear. Like what? Yeah. Like just some Nick. Like yeah,
some variation
on Bear.
So what about you? I'm curious. My one follow up is, do you have a sense for how often you use their nicknames versus their real names? Are there some kids that just always get a nickname and some, or does it just whatever pops out of your mouth?
Clara and Owen, I think their names are so easy to say, like, hey Bear or hey Owner, like probably daily.
Right.
The other ones are more special.
Yeah.
Like I wouldn't probably, no, that's not true. Like if I came in the room and I wanted Jacob to do something for me and I was trying to be sort of, I don't know, sweet to him, I might be like, Jakey, can you do this?
Yeah.
So, but his nickname is his name too. Right.
Right? That's true. Yeah, that's true. Okay, so I have quite a long list, but my firstborn is like me, did not really get a lot of nicknames. I called Allegra Monkey as a baby and toddler. She was really, she had all this dark hair. She did look like a little monkey. And I loved that. It was like a really sweet nickname and she just outgrew it eventually. But I probably called her that till she was, I don't know, 5 or 6. She doesn't really have any others. So Reed is Reedy Roo, which became Roo, Rooster, Rooster Booster, Rudy Boo, Rudy Booty. Any variation of that. I think that's his main one. Violet nicknamed herself Vavi when she
I love that she nicknamed herself.
She started calling herself Vavi when she very first started to talk. She was maybe 18 months. And you know how they talk about themselves in the third person?
Yes.
Like they'll say their name, but she couldn't say her name. And she said Vavi. And we all loved it because it sounded like a fancy old lady on Fifth Avenue or something. And we really thought it was going to stick. Like the kids called her Vavi for, I don't know, 6 months or a year. And my parents called her Vavi. And then it didn't stick for whatever reason. I don't think she liked it. So as soon as she wasn't using it for herself. And then I think she even maybe told my parents at one point she didn't like to be called Vavi, but it was so cute.
So funny.
But she has the most nicknames. So hers are so weird. I'm just going to say a few. Goo, Goonie, Gooners, Goose, Goosey Jane, Janie, Janie McGee, Vavi Jane. And then I called all of my babies Dinky when they were really little, or Dink. And I don't know. I don't know who. I think it was all of them. I think any little baby I would call Dink.
So I now know that I also had a name that I called all my babies and I can't remember what it is. And it's making me crazy.
That's so funny. Why I need a baby I've probably left some out, actually. I have to listen to the way I talk to my kids. It's so funny. And my kids thus far haven't been like, don't call me that. I think Reed every once in a while. Well, if someone calls him Reedy, like we have some close family friends that will still call him Reedy from when he was little, or Reedy Roo. And I just kind of see him be like, whoa, like, I don't know if I'm ready for that. So he will probably at some point say, don't call me that. But
don't call me that. Anymore,
I mean, there are worse things.
I have a follow up question for you.
Yeah.
Did you ever refer to, like, especially when Allegra and Reed were little, did you ever refer to them to each other as brother and sister?
No,
like I know. I remember doing that
so
for
like,
a long time.
Here's like, go give this to brother. Like that. Yeah. Yeah. We never did the sis or sissy with girls like a lot of people do. I maybe did it a little bit when, you know, Violet was a baby and she had big sissy, but we didn't do a ton of that. You had a ton of brothers in a row. So you did that like.
I did that only with the oldest two. And what's funny about that is I remember for a little while it was, you know, it would be very much like, hey, go see if brother is ready or, you know, do whatever. So there was just the two boys that were brothers. Then Owen or William came along. He was baby. It was brother, and baby.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember actually my mother-in-law correcting me once. Mm-hmm. And like, I don't remember exactly how it went down. Like I said, brother. And then she like repeated what I had said to the kid, but then used their name.
Oh,
and
interesting.
And I felt super self-conscious about it. And then I felt really bad. Like, have I like reduced my kid to their sibling? You know what I mean? But like to me, it was just a sweet thing.
It's totally a sweet thing. And I know lots of people who do it.
I stopped after that. And I kind of wish I had those days. It was so sweet. Like, no, tell brother.
Yeah,
no,
brother. I think it sounds very normal. I know lots of people who do it. I have a good friend in Arizona who has two boys and her boys are now like, I want to say like 7 and 10 and they still call each other brother. It's just the two of them. And she'll still say, it's just like,
it's kind of like Arrested Development. Hey, brother.
Yes.
Well, and my kids do call each other that sometimes as a joke in the Arrested Development, like voice in the Buster voice, they'll go, hey brother, which is funny, but not really a nickname. They're just making fun of the show. Yeah.
All right. Well, we made it through. Have we told everybody everything about our families?
Probably more than they ever really wanted to know. But I think we made it through.
It's a good. I think for new listeners, hopefully this was a good little intro to us and our families. And for longtime listeners, we probably told you something you didn't know about the spelling of our name. Now everyone's going to be listening for Megan versus Megan. We'll get 400 emails about that, I bet.
I'm sure we will. I'm looking forward to it because I love that stuff.
Yeah, me too. It's fun to talk about. Okay, guys. Well, if we mentioned anything to link to, it'll always be at themomhour.com. All of our great sponsors are linked up there, so go and check them out. And we will be back with you soon. Thanks, Megan.
Bye, guys. Sarah, I have been having just the best time making my new podcast, The Tease Made. I launched back in November, and so far I've covered topics like staying warm on cold winter walks, nurturing creativity, how to be a great host, and even Nordic secrets to loving winter.
Well, you know I am fan number one of The Tease Made. It's got such a cozy vibe, and it seems like you've really hit your stride in covering topics like wellness, self-care, comforting rituals and routines, and home and family life.
Just look for The Tease Made with Megan Francis wherever you get your podcasts, or head to theteasemade.com to find all the episodes. Sarah, I started a Substack last spring, just kind of as an experiment, and it turns out I love it. I'm treating it kind of like an old school blog, writing about things that are happening in my life.
Megan, I've loved following your stuff on Substack, and I actually just really like Substack in general.
You know, we've both been a lot less active on Instagram lately, and I'm finding that Substack scratches that itch to connect and create without all the busyness of a typical social media feed. So I would love it if Mom Hour listeners wanted to look me up there. I'm at meganfrancis.substack.com, and that's Megan with two A's, meaganfrancis.substack.com.